Hello and welcome to Liberal Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know right now if you're driving innovation across the worlds of business, design, tech, and culture. Today I'm joined by Nick Sherrod, co-founder and fellow colleague at Liberal Sessions. Hi, Nick.
Hello. Welcome.
And we're also joined by a wonderful new Liberal mate, Brendan Edgerton. Brendan is a product sustainability strategist who helps organizations turn regulatory demands and shifting customer expectations into innovation and competitive edge. With experience leading at the World Business Council for Sustainable Development and more recently 3M, Brendan is the person you call when you need to operationalize sustainability. Hi, Brendan. How are you?
Hello. Good. Doing fine. Thank you.
So we'll kick off today's podcast with the first topic. So the first thing that we have lined up for you guys is, in surveys, Gen Z appear to be the most, of Gen Zs including me, appear to be the most green and sustainability aware generation around. Their buying choices, and especially around fashion, don't seem to align that, however. But why is that? And what does that mean for leaders who want to create green products, do you think?
Who are you going to first, Josh?
I think we'll go to Brendan.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yeah, no, it's interesting. You know, on this topic, there's kind of always been this say-do gap of, you know, individuals, regardless of generation, that want to be the people that will be purchasing more sustainable goods, but that's not always the case. And you know, I think one of the assumptions with this type of study is that green products have to cost more. And that's not always the case. You know, there's certainly premium products that have a higher price than, you know, the conventional ones. But more and more, I think we're seeing eco labels being pursued and just applied on to packaging or to products, because it's kind of what has to be done to compete. It's almost a license to operate in some verticals. And so, you know, there's that one caveat that sustainability is becoming more the convention in some ways. You know, we don't have complete sustainable products, but it's creeping into the product portfolio more and more. And the other side is that even on those sustainable products, there was a McKinsey study that was published a couple years ago that said more sustainable products actually have higher growth rates than those less sustainable options. So I think in this study, they said that there was a 1.7% advantage in the compounded annual growth rate that sustainable products had. And if they had more than one sustainable feature, that doubled. Or that didn't double. If they had more than one sustainable feature, their growth rate themselves actually double compared to the alternative. So, there's certainly that say-do gap that exists, I think, for every generation and really for every vertical. But, you know, at the same time, we're seeing a lot of other positive trends in terms of buying behavior and market growth for sustainable products, and that's applying globally, that there's still plenty of reason for optimism.
I think it's interesting, Brendan, you're probably right in the sort of the center of, where all of the, whether it's dispute or whether the controversy is just now, because actually what is required right now is really great products that are sustainable. One of the things I think we've picked up, we've had a lot of sustainability leaders in different industries that we've really had to, almost force or cajole to get into qualitative interviews, real interviews with customers, rather than relying on the big quant surveys, because you realize that, yeah, more people than ever care about sustainability, care about climate change, care about what's going on in the world. But when you actually get into a buying choice, you've got to be in a place where you're offering them the best product at that particular time. And that's a classic product challenge. But I feel like there's a real kind of tipping and almost a frustration for some people who keep quoting the big market data on how much people care. And then they look at, the sort of traction around sustainability products. But, to your point, when you're actually making a buying choice between, a bunch of products, then things like pricing come in, all kinds of odd patterns of behavior come in around particular products. And what we need right now is really good product makers to make sustainable products. That's the challenge right now, rather than necessarily relying on the kind of winds of change to do it for us. I think there's a real challenge there.
Fully agree. Price is king in every conversation. That's, if you can be competitive on price and you have a sustainable solution that's at parity with the convention, then that's a strong differentiator, especially in B2B markets. And ultimately in some cases that can be with the general consumer as well.
Yeah. it is interesting, those patterns around particular products. We had a project recently where we're working with a big bank around, well, in particular around their ESG commitments, but therefore it was translating all the kind of plans for climate change into, you know, how many of their customers that had a mortgage with them were making green changes to their home, all these kind of things. Mm. And it was a classic area where you could do really interesting interviews with people, even with quite extreme cases. So there was one interview we did with this guy who had made loads of green changes to his life. He volunteered it before. In the interview, before we'd gone into, hey, we're going to talk about climate change, he'd already volunteered that they were really into sustainability. They cycled to work. Mm. They actually even made changes in terms of fashion. They only bought from green fashion brands. He volunteered really early that he'd got a brick he put in his toilet to make use it less water. Oh, yeah. He made all these changes. And then we said, hey, so when you bought your house, did you think about making green changes to your house? And did you think about a mortgage that might be a green mortgage? And there was this little silence. And then you realized that was complete anathema to him, because mm-hmm. money was a thing that he made, had a sort of separate box in his head. And money was a thing where he got advised by his dad. And money was all about the cheapest option, the best deal you can get right now. Yeah. And you realize that there was this complete kind of disjoint in the kind of the way that the brand as such had been thinking about that, because they thought their green products meant going to green customers, and if you presented them with the green option, then it would all be good. And you realize that no, actually, you had to really create a product that was going to be compelling for those kind of people at the point that they made a buying choice, not just like in general in some kind of meta survey or, you know, yeah, like testing messaging somewhere, but saying actually, in that case, when you're going through an aggregator site or you're going through a mortgage advisor and someone's putting 5 options on the table, how do you help someone feel like they're making a smart choice as well as a green choice?
Yeah. Well, you hit the nail on the head with the customer, right? That it seems common sense, you know, when you're talking about business of, you know, always having the customer first. But you'd be surprised at how much that gets lost in the discussions of sustainability. And I think a lot of it has to do with the reporting ESG side of sustainability that we've allowed the conversation become so big. And, you know, that whole process starts off with a materiality assessment. And that materiality assessment requires that you talk to your broad group of stakeholders. So you're talking to your customers are just one small part of that. You have your investors, you have your suppliers, you have your employees, you could go on and on. And so that group provides those perspectives that form that sustainability strategy, that inform those reporting metrics. And that's fine. That's the intent of the exercise. However, that doesn't lead you down a value creating path necessarily. What gets lost in that often is that in order to create value through sustainability, we do need to focus on the customer first and foremost. And then understanding how do we create value for them with sustainability embedded into it. So kind of like what you were talking about of we just need great products that have sustainability as part of it and just not make it an option. And we figure out a way to get it as close in price to the convention. And some companies and businesses have found ways to do this. Until we get back to the customer and understand, not just throw any sustainability into the product, but what do they prioritize? You know, is it a reduced carbon footprint? Is it lower water usage? There's many different things that different customers would have in mind and be able to understand. Really going through that exercise of that, what is that voice of customer? What are those levers in sustainability that might allow us to have a price premium on this product, or, you know, that will differentiate us some way? And, you know, take a step back from that reporting cycle, from the broad stakeholder group, and really hone in on those customers again.
I think there's also a really interesting element here as well, where part of the challenge in big companies is that the people who work in sustainability or are interested professionally in sustainability are in some ways like really sort of overrepresented in people. The people who work in this sector are really unrepresentative of the rest of the world. So in terms of most people who work in sustainability really care about it, and at some point have made a change in their life where they're like, I'm going to professionally focus in this area, and I've made real commitments that way. That therefore means that when we see survey data and such like that says, hey, more and more people care. We think more and more people are like us, which is not necessarily the case, right? So in terms of this really interesting thing, we're just sort of, it's a meta challenge in lots of industries, lots of companies just now, around this fact that there's lots of really passionate people driving the green transformation of their companies. But quite often they find it quite hard to get their head around having real empathy for where the customer actually is, which is mostly in most markets, B2B or B2C right now. A lot of customers are saying, yeah, I really care about this. I think it's a good thing. But one, I find it a bit confusing if you start going into some of the technicalities. And two, when it gets to a buying choice, I need to have a really hard reason not to go for the thing with the best price point or the thing that my boss thinks is a good idea or that has a kind of social kudos to it. So, or the classic kind of product challenges. There's a really kind of interesting challenge, which is the market we need to go after now we're past the early adopters, is a market that's driven by people who aren't like us if you work in sustainability. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the bottom line is going to come to price pay nowadays more than ever, you know, with the inflation, being top of mind and buying power, that's a hard thing to overcome. That's much more urgent for most people than, thinking about climate change and things like that. It's a fascinating time. You know, I think it's regardless of the economic situation, I think revisiting sustainability and reflecting as to whether ESG is the most important thing. I think we've allowed that concept to be intercepted and destroyed a bit. But there might be some good things to take from that.
This is probably a strange example, but I was just thinking of stuff there in terms of the say-do gap and in terms of like bringing a great product that is also sustainable rather than just tagging the sustainability tag on top of it. There's a brand of toilet roll called Who Gives a Crap, which is like a pretty reasonably sized brand here, and it preaches itself on being like entirely using paper, entirely being sustainability. But for reasons that I won't disclose publicly, the product itself is kind of ironically crap. Isn't very good, basically. So it's like, it's a good example of like a product that's like to the nines, completely built itself on the ground up and being sustainable, but then the actual use of it isn't good for the one sole purpose that it's meant to be used for, which could be quite dire straits in bad times.
Well, this is the thing about people assuming that, well, there has been an early adopter group is willing to put up with a worse quality product as such, or like in terms of experience level, for a higher price point. That's fine. But if we're going to make anything big happen, we need to go beyond that. And that's the thing that's kind of a repetitive pattern.
Yeah. No, I have heard of that company. I love the name, the concept, and everything. I haven't tried their product. It's unfortunate to hear, the performance isn't as great as you would hope. And I think it's been a struggle for sustainable products for some time, right? That it's been, you have to sacrifice on performance to some degree. You have to sacrifice on aesthetics. Green products have not been the prettiest, right? Because there's this idea that the sustainability element of it has to be, it has to basically punch you in the face. It doesn't have to be like that, right? First and foremost, you have a great performing product, even if it's a little bit of a higher price point, but people know that, it's coming from, recycled paper. That might be something they can get around if the product is good. And it's because, at the end of the day, the product has to be good, the price has to be good. And then let's see how sustainability fits in.